are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.
Movie and like 45 minutes into it, I go, are we ever going to see King Kong? What is the deal?
Right, yeah.
Or at the very least, someone's glass of water just starts shaking or something.
Ironically, it looks just as beautiful as King Kong did color-wise.
You throw a bunch of people, beautiful people in a jungle. You know, you got Robert Pattinson and Charlie Hunnam, throw them in a jungle.
Yeah.
It's real pretty. I mean, it's kind of missing Brie Larson, but you know.
Yeah. I had the misfortune of not knowing very much about it going in. I hadn't seen any trailers. And 45 minutes in, I'm going, so what is this movie about?
Yeah. It's National Geographic, like a mystery. If you will, quite literally.
Yeah.
Like the movie we're talking about is The Lost City of Zed.
I've been
mistakenly calling it Z, but this is a British film, and the British say Zed.
They say Zed,
and repeatedly in the movie they say Zed.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? They're like, we're sticking with the Zed.
When I moved over there for like 5 years, and the first time I heard that, I was like, what's Zed? Why don't you just guys say Z? Like, because it's not Z, it is Zed.
To be fair, they were using the language first. So.
Yeah.
But you know. Times change. Get over it, brah.
Get with it.
Well, there's different. I learned today that the Greeks, for the letters T, sometimes make it sound like a D, and for P, sometimes sounds like a B.
Yeah.
And I learned this because there's an NBA player whose last name is Antetokounmpo, and I heard it's actually pronounced Antetokounmpo.
Man, you learn a lot from trying to like understand the pronunciation of new celebrities' names.
Yeah.
I've learned,
yeah.
You know, but I still can't do Mr. Echo. I'm still like, okay, every time I try halfway through, I'm like, my tongue is in a knot. I'm like, I give up. I'm just a white guy.
I'm happy. I know Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, I can do that. I can do that exactly.
But it's just like once you know his name, especially, isn't it fun to say it? Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah.
Because if you say it in front of somebody else, like, oh. Okay, that's how you say it. Okay, I'm going to follow that guy.
Well, The Lost City of Zed is directed by James Gray, based on a 2009 book of the same game, named by David Grant. It's based on a true story with Charlie Hunnam, you know, the guy from lead guy from Sons of Anarchy, playing Colonel Percy Fawcett, real life guy. He's a military guy. He was looking to do more for his family, because even though he was a major, his father apparently was kind of a shitheel, and there was not a lot of. Back in those days, if your dad wasn't cool, then you weren't cool.
Yeah.
You have to do something pretty drastic to make up for it. So he gets offered by the Geographic Society, which ended up becoming the National Geographic Society, but not in this movie, a chance to go and explore the Amazon to try and find the base of the Amazon where nobody had ever actually found it before. And part of the reasoning, you know, was economic shit, something about growing rubber, whatever. It doesn't really have anything to do ultimately with the bigger plot
because
of the movie.
War was looming or something, or there's a profit to be had.
Yeah. I mean, by the time he gets there, like that, they almost immediately drop that element as being important to the plot. Yeah. So it's like, all right, don't worry about it. But he shows up there, finds out Robert Pattinson is a guy who's like, you know, another British guy who's been kind of hanging out in the jungle for a while and doing stuff, who's becoming his William Riker, his number one. What is the name of the other guy? Was it Angus McFadden, I think?
Angus McFadden,
playing the other one.
I see him again.
Who, you know, the next guy, his Worf or whatever, you know? Sorry, I have to put everything through Star Trek metaphors. I won't understand what's going on. And together they explore and not only find the where the Amazon starts, but find evidence of something all British people always thought at that point that was just a ridiculous myth that the conquistadors bought into when they went into South America, which was they found evidence of an ancient civilization there. And you think I'm spoiling the movie, but I'm not. We're not even like, that's just pretty much the first act of this film.
It really is.
It's a long movie.
Yeah, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes as they go back to England and he's like, hooray, we found it. And people are like, I don't know, dude. And he's like, but we did. Here's some pottery. And they're like, still don't know, dude.
It's one of things, it's one of the things where movies where like years are signified by changing hairstyles and things like that.
Yeah. And, you know, and thank God, old age makeup that's gotten better over the years.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they don't do that weird thing now that looks like you've got some weird skin disease when you age. Yeah. It actually looks real.
Winona Ryder says her hands just saying.
What now?
Winona Ryder never says her hands. Yeah.
This is like ultimately three trips to the Amazon. All equally dangerous and exciting, and then long stretches in between in England, not so much exciting or interesting. I mean, at least that's how I felt about it.
British politics doesn't seem to be the most engaging. Like, they yell a lot more than, like, our U.S. Congress does in session, which is kind of cool, but, like, it's not that interesting.
That hasn't changed at all, actually. Yeah.
I mean, there's various controversies along the way every time he comes back. That some of them work themselves out eventually. Others are the impetus for the plot to continue the way it does.
There's nothing really, like, you know, if you don't going into this not knowing anything about the story, there's nothing really surprising about it. I will say the British aspects of it are, you know, even less surprising than...
Well, part of the reason, because it just makes the whole movie feel like, you know, so what's the expression? So British it shits the Queen. You know, it's like, and this is nothing against the British. It's just cliched British, you know? Yeah. Especially Charlie Hunnam and the actress who plays his wife, Sienna Miller. It seems like anything they ever say is like really old British aphorisms and cliches, and they're just always giving a huge speech about something. And it all comes across as pretty corny.
At the same time, though, I liked both their characters. I liked her character as well. I thought that she was, you know, kind of well written. I think that's also because of Miller, because I don't like Sienna Miller as a rule, you know.
Usually. She's just one of those actresses like Jessica Biel. I don't realize it's even someone I should recognize. She just fades into something.
But this time, I thought she...
She's nondescript.
She wasn't this time.
Okay.
I thought she actually leapt out a little bit, especially toward the end.
They wrote her character as being more impactful than like a lot of wife characters sometimes are written as like concerned wife on phone, or like in this case, since phones weren't invented, concerned wife writing a letter. Like she does more impactful.
Yeah, and they definitely try and show this character Colonel Percy Fawcett as somebody who was thinking ahead of his times in terms of class and how women should be treated and like how the natives should be treated, which is a big deal here. I mean, this movie definitely to some extent is quote woke. I question how accurate that actually is for, you know, this character. It feels so much like just more of a product over time, but maybe it's true. I don't honestly know. Regardless, the fact that all this apparently really happened the way they, more or less how they said it did, is in and of itself kind of fascinating. That there was this
whole
major adventure happening there. Like, I mean, this guy's the last Indiana Jones, who was like going out and like, you know, there was a line, there was a point in this movie, did you not say to yourself, if only you spoke Ovidos, you know?
There's something about it that is very sort of, it just like sneaks up and it's captivating in a very deceptive way. Like you just find yourself being pulled in as, and I think it's mainly because it's his passion, really, and his belief.
Yeah. It is interesting in the sense of, like, it talks about a little bit in the title cards at the end, where he was of the time right before, I guess, technology kind of advanced to where we were able to... I mean, by now, if there were lost cities in the jungle, we'd have found them by now.
Right.
They might still be
maybe
super
not
hidden.
Under the sea, though.
they might still be super hidden, but I mean, like, with today's technology, which is only about 75 years or so after all of this happened... we'd have found them by now.
We just launched those mapping bombs and hope they don't piss off King Kong.
He was the last of this kind of era, and so that's a fascinating part of it.
Yeah, and as well the fact that, like, for so long after the events of this film, his story went kind of thought of as like an amusing footnote in history, but one that never paid off until literally just recently in the last, within the last 20 years.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, it looks like he might have actually been right.
Like, what do you know? Jeez.
Well, you know, I mean, I think on the whole, there's strong performances through this. I mean, Pattinson is definitely, it's hard to tell what's going on behind that big bushy beard he's got going on there.
That's true.
But you know, he's got to be going, dude, my movies I've been in totaled over $1 billion. Why am I following this TV guy? You know, but
he's got more cred than you do, Robert.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. More charisma, to be sure. Hunnam is playing this very loud and very, you know, I mean, he speaks all his lines like he's on a stage. Really, it's a very old school performing where everything is like very enunciated and very projected. But yeah. He's always been kind of that kind of actor.
Definitely the best performance I've seen him in a while. Yeah, I haven't really seen all of Sons of Anarchy, but I mean, like, he's been very wooden in like every movie I've seen him in.
I can't even remember the way he performed in Crimson Peak, and I love Crimson Peak, but I can't remember him much of him in that movie.
Not very good.
I know it was a supporting role.
I thought I burned every copy.
I like Crimson Peak.
Yeah, you're the guy.
I'm the guy, yeah.
Actually, I know other people who love it too, and soon they will pay the price. I didn't say that out loud, did I? Fuck. Anyway, yeah, I one thing I got to note as well, we haven't even talked about Tom Holland eventually around the third act here becomes his grown-up son. Tom Holland is playing Spider-Man in the new movie coming up, who looks weird with a mustache.
He really does.
He's not in this enough for me to really have any strong feeling about how he is in it one way or the other.
Nah.
But, you know, for the notes, Tom Holland's in this.
I hope that's not the way of aging him or something.
Yeah, because his performance, it's nothing really his fault. It's just because... like he's going to be in such a huge movie. Like, every time he tried to, like, lean in to his father and, like he's going to whisper something, I always wanted to be like, I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah, I'm about to be in a movie that's going to make more than everything you've ever done together combined.
Yeah.
So a couple of movies.
Jungle shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I had a Franco Nero, by the way. That's who that was in the jungle, is the Baron early on, who they're trying to make a deal with. Franco Nero, the guy who the classic Western, spaghetti Western actor who played Django.
Yes.
You know, a legend.
Man, I can't believe I didn't recognize. Man.
I know. I was like, he looks familiar. And I was like, I think that's Franco Nero. I'm never 100% sure because he's pretty old now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I had fun with this, but man, 2 hours and 20 minutes. That's a hell of a fucking 150 minutes, technically. That's a hell of a fucking slog for any movie, even one that features angry natives shooting like arrows and
shooting
piranhas.
Especially because even as you were describing the script, you mentioned the whole reason they sent him out there. And then it's like, yeah, but that immediately ceases to be important. And it's like, that was 15 minutes you could have cut out of this movie easily.
It did feel kind of like, let's just say it was they were searching for the source of the Amazon instead of all that other reasoning, you know? Because at that point, England really was all about, like, you know, that whole, why did you climb that mountain? Because it was there.
I thought they were just trying to, like, shuffle him off to do just something like, oh, go do this busy work.
Maybe to some degree, yeah. Like, some of this is really dangerous and nobody else really wants to do it because everybody keeps dying who tries.
Well,
but
send that guy.
Send that guy. He's
expendable.
Hey, guys, what's going on? Hey, can I help? I want to help. We've all had that guy in our life.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, Jesus, go to the store and get us all some cigarettes. Wait. Okay, guys. Happy to help. All right, let's go to final thoughts. Frank, why don't you start us out here?
Well, you know, there is so much crammed in here, and I think I really wish this would have been done as like a documentary on the History Channel, or not documentary, like a four-part miniseries, like Hatfield and McCoy's, or, you know, something in that vein, because I think it would have worked in that avenue. I think it would, you know,
agreed,
because it's so perfectly spaced out between all the different acts. Because also, you didn't mention the war. He goes to war at one point.
Yeah, there's World War One happens. Yeah. I was wondering as the movie was going on.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Yeah, I know that you're just like, okay, so...
So you got one night for like the first voyage, like, one night for the second voyage, one night for the war, and then one night for the third voyage, and then, you know, between, you know, however many weeks.
I mean, I would honestly have just taken a text crawl. So here's all that shit that you missed.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not really pertinent to the stuff you're here to see, which is a bunch of natives and headhunters.
Yeah, from a screenwriting standpoint, it's like, yeah, he goes there three times. That's, make it a four-act movie.
That's a challenge.
Those are three of your four acts.
Yeah. I mean, I admit, I'm like, I've always been weird about James Gray. His movies always seem like they almost get there, but there's something like that that's off, and you're like, man, this is almost a really good movie.
I think the reason this movie works on any level is because of James Gray, because it is James Gray. I think if anybody else had tried it, I'm sure some other people could have pulled it.
Sure, there was an early version of the script with Matthew McConaughey that was exactly what we're talking about.
Brad Pitt was originally going to be like Charlie Hunnam's role, actually. But, no, this is just the wrong medium for it. I think it would have been much more effective had it been, like, in an HBO, like, miniseries type thing. But it's compressed. It's jam-packed. It's saved by his performances, which, you know, is due to some good acting from, you know, all across the board. But also to James Gray, because he does love character. And I know the script, the dialogue in the script isn't the strongest. And this is, you know, in that level, it is his weakest script, screenplay. But, you know, he does love character. And he does infuse his characters and the film with sort of like a grace and a dignity about it. And it does pull you in. It does captivate you. It's beautifully shot, as all his films are. It's not his strongest film, but he can operate on this grand sort of level and still retain what makes him a good filmmaker. So on that level, I'll probably give it about 7 out of 10 trips to the Amazon.
Fair enough. JC?
It gets a ton of points for being as ambitious as it is. Like, it's shot on location. There's no there's no studios. There's no, like, studio space here. Like, it's a lot of effort went into to make this movie really good, and the parts where it fails, it's really just because it's trying to throw too much at you, and I don't think it's a little disjointed, because the performances are great. It looks beautiful. Being shot on location makes great use of all of that. It doesn't quite come together to make a movie that I want to give high marks to. It's missing something. It's also kind of the wrong time of year for that. Like at this time of year, I'm sort of in the mind frame of like wanting to see movies that are a little more fun. The last movie I saw in a theater was Fate of the Furious, and then like to jump into this with different.
Is this like a fall movie, like an October sort of movie?
Yeah, and I could also see where like, well, this wouldn't have really won any awards, so it's like. That's kind of the point. It struggles to really find its audience. It struggles to tell its story concisely, and because of that, it doesn't really fit anywhere on the calendar. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff here. It just doesn't quite come together as well as it should. I would give it 6 out of 10 slaps to Spider-Man's face.
You know, I you were saying this is not what you think one of his James Gray's strongest films. I have not seen The Yards or Two Lovers, but this is definitely the best of the ones I have seen. Like, I like this so much better than We Own the Night.
You can now say you weren't that crazy about We Own the Night.
Oh, I really didn't care for that much. It was like, there's so many good elements here that never fuse together at all. This film's at least really beautiful to watch during the jungle parts, which is the bulk of the film. Mm-hmm. You're on the edge of your seat, really. It's exciting watching it, you know? I mean, it's not Raiders of the Lost Ark exciting, but it's still really interesting.
It's really involving, it, you know.
Yeah, and especially knowing it's all really true. Mm-hmm. I mean, James Gray was in many ways biting off more than anyone could chew here in trying to kind of combine Lawrence of Arabia with Apocalypse Now. And he even said, he's like, he said it was David Lean with slightly more hallucinogenic feel because the protagonist went to the jungle and sort of went mad. I'm like, okay, so that's what you were trying to do. It's just no one should ever attempt that. That's the K-12, dude. You don't do that. does it fire on all cylinders? Absolutely. God, now you got me thinking about Fast and the Furious metaphors.
Oh, gosh.
No, it absolutely does not, but it is still pretty entertaining. It's one of those movies I can't recommend going to see at home in the theater. Fortunately, you won't have to because it's actually coming out on Amazon Prime, I think, in like 2 weeks or something.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, like almost immediately.
Let my dad know. My dad would dig this movie.
Yeah, well, then he'll have a chance to see it if he has Amazon Prime. So, and that's the best way to see it, maybe with a nice long bathroom break in between. I give this
handy.
7 out of 10 very well-fed piranha.
All right, yeah. I forgot about those guys.
Yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch was at one point playing the lead here. Interesting. Huh. And then his career took off, and he was like, yeah, I don't think so.
Hang out in the jungle for 3 months, or hang out in Hollywood, making Doctor Strange, making that Marvel money.
Yeah. Dude, no, there's a tough choice.
I think the choice was clear.